Second hour of Light the Tower here on the Horn. Come your way from the UT campus. Craig White with you. Standing by. A few moments from now, we'll have the weekly news conference for Longhorns head football coach Steve Sarkisian. So that's coming up here in just a few moments. Reviewing the game against Oklahoma State. Of course, this is an open date week on the schedule for the Longhorns. No game this week. Then they'll be back in action on Saturday, October 30th in Waco against the Baylor Bears with, wait for it, an 11 a.m. kickoff. So, yeah, for the fifth consecutive game, Texas will have an 11 a.m. kick. That will be at McLean Stadium in Waco, 11 a.m. kick on October 30th. We know they won't have an 11 a.m. kick this week because they have no game this week, but it is 11 a.m. will be the kickoff time. The other games that week, there's an Iowa State of West Virginia game at 1 o'clock, TCU at Kansas State at 2:30, Texas Tech at Oklahoma at 2:30, and Kansas at Oklahoma State at 6 o'clock. Longhorns head coach Steve Sarkisian is here and ready to begin this week's news conference here on the UT campus.
All righty. Well, I think a couple things here, just recapping after last Saturday's ball game. You know, I think obviously there's a level of frustration for us all. You know, we all get into this to ultimately want to win, and you want to play well in doing so. And, you know, what happened in the ball game with our inability to ultimately perform in the fourth quarter, there's a couple ways to go about it. We can dwell completely on what went wrong, or look at it also from the side of we played pretty good football for about 2.5, 3 quarters against a quality undefeated, you know, top 10 team. So I think the promising part for us is, you know, we're plenty capable to compete at a very high level, which we've done now for 2 straight weeks against 2 top 10 teams, had leads in the fourth quarter, and then ultimately didn't finish those ball games. So I don't think it's about our ability to coach. I don't think it's about our ability to execute and to play, because we've proven we're more than capable to do that. Now it's about our ability to sustain that and to do it at the critical moments, even after maybe there's some momentum swings that happen in the game. And so that's really been our focus and our mindset, making sure the players are reassured and understand that they're more than capable to perform at a very high level. That our coaches are more than capable to prepare them to do that. But ultimately, it's got to be down getting ourselves in the right frame of mind when we get ourselves close to the finish and having our ability to finish. And that finish is not, you know, superhuman efforts. It's about continuing to do the things that got us to that point, because obviously it was good enough to get us to that point with the lead. Now we need to find a way to continue to do that. So that's really been the big picture scope of looking at it and really looking at it here for the first 7 weeks of the season. And so that'll be a lot of the things that we focus on here this week, not to mention getting ourselves healthy. You go with a 7-straight-week stretch. Clearly, you know, you can get banged up and beat up, and we've lost some guys for an extended period of time. We have some other players that obviously have the bumps and bruises. That's football. That's the way it goes. So both those things will be big components for us moving forward, and then continuing trying to find ways to develop our players so that they can be the best that they can be. I will say, you know, I really appreciate our fans. I thought the atmosphere Saturday was tremendous. Obviously, we had a really, we had a big recruiting weekend, and for those kids that came in from out of town to see DKR that electric, I thought was a great deal for us, and we'll continue to be so. So, you know, for us, we're going to practice Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week, and then obviously as a staff, we'll hit the road recruiting Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then crank it up for Baylor next week.
Sark, I know you talk all the time you can't fix what happened before you took the job, but these are players that have been in a ton of one possession games and haven't been able to finish. Is that a systemic issue that might take more than just what's left of this regular season to fix?
You know, I think I've never been a guy that has tried to wait to address issues as they present themselves. Sometimes you don't know maybe all of the issues, and maybe some of them were issues in the past that we don't deal with now, or maybe some of those issues don't rear kind of some of their ugly head until you get further down the road. You know, I've been talking to just a couple analogies. It's like you get a gift, right? And you open up that gift and you open it up and it's a sleeve of, you know, it's a box of golf balls. And then you open up that box and then there's the sleeves of the golf balls. And then you open up that sleeve and it's not actually that brand of the golf ball that you thought you were going to get. And so sometimes you have to drill down, you have to peel back the layers to find out, you know, what potential issues you have, and then you address them as they present themselves. Sometimes we have different issues than maybe what were before. Sometimes some of those issues never show themselves back up, and sometimes they don't show up till we're a little further down the road, and that's our job as coaches to address them and continue to move forward. So, you know, nothing that we've ever done since I've gotten here has been, you know, lay blame on what has ever happened before. None of it's ever been, well, we'll just deal with that later, or he can't do this. It's dealing with the issues as they present themselves. And so we're presented with something here that I've said, I feel like we're plenty capable. And now it's about getting our players to understand, you know, one step after another mentality, and not worrying about what lies ahead or what's happened in the past, and just focusing on the task at hand. And that's that next play mentality that that we're really trying to instill in our team. I think we've shown we have the ability to do it, and we're more than capable physically to do it. Now we've got to put that into action moving forward in the second half of the season.
Steve, kind of building on that, I mean, what in your coaching past have you seen that works with guys who are addressing the mental issues of it? Because you're right, it's not a physical thing. It's clearly something going on, I guess, between the ears with guys. So where can you pull back on and say, okay, this worked in the past? And
well, like that. I mean, I do a lot of work in this area. I think this is probably one of the more underappreciated aspects of sport, right? I mean, I think the mental space of the elite competitors historically is something that is really what separated them, whether in any sport, football, basketball, baseball, boxing, whatever that is. I think in recent history, we've tried to dig a little deeper into it and understand it and try to develop it from a team mentality. And so, you know, I'm definitely, you know, this is a portion of me that I believe in. It's nothing necessarily new in the way that we speak to our team and the things that we talk about. But there's obviously a shift in focus of, okay, this is an area where we need to improve upon. And so we it can't just be ho-hum, let's keep moving on. We have to do the necessary things to address it. And that started this morning in our team meeting. And so from a psyche standpoint, I feel like that's really kind of in our wheelhouse, because we've already laid a really good foundation for that in the 10 months that we've been here. So it wasn't like I've just been a rah-rah coach for 10 months, and then today I started to get into the psyche, and they were like, who in the heck is this guy? He's never talked about or talked this way to us before. So I think it's a natural progression for us. We've laid a good foundation, and now we've just got to dig deeper into that aspect of it.
Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
A two-part question. The first part of it is Casey Thompson still your starter going forward?
Yes.
Okay. So the second part of that question, Coach, is when Hudson struggled after Arkansas game, you went and looked at the film and decided to go into a different direction. What's the difference here after maybe Casey struggled? You talked about the 7 three and outs here. What's the difference with your decision to go with Casey and stick with him as opposed to your previous decision?
Well, I think Casey has earned a little bit more of that right to work through some of those struggles. The week before, he throws 5 touchdowns against Oklahoma. He had a 6 touchdown game against Texas Tech. So he's played and shown really good football to us. I think he's earned that opportunity to work his way out of this. Now we're still developing Hudson, and if that time comes, we need to make a change. You know, we'll be prepared to do so. But we have all the confidence in the world in Casey that he can do that. But bigger picture, I think holistically it's us as a team, and then you pare it down, it's to us as an offensive unit, and same with the defense. And, you know, obviously the quarterback, it's like anything. We choose to be a head coach. We choose to play the position of quarterback. And with those types of positions, you know, when you win, sometimes you get a little bit more credit than maybe you deserve. And when you lose, maybe you get a little bit more of the blame than maybe you deserve. But that's okay. You got to understand the arena you chose to be in and to be part of. And you can't ride the emotional roller coaster of the up and down. You got to try to find that even keel. So I have all the utmost confidence in Casey that he'll bounce back and play great football for us.
Hey, Steve, I've asked coaches this in the past. I know it's a fraternity. When struggles happen, who do you go to for advice or counsel? Who's your Mr. Miyagi? And have you talked to Mr. Miyagi in the last couple
of weeks? I've talked to a couple different people. You know, you try to look at things, you know, from different perspectives sometimes. I mean, obviously, I have my perspective, and I really try to take a ground level view of things. You know, I really believe, and our players believe, I'm in the foxhole with them. So I try to have that perspective so that I can see it from the player's perspective. I also try to look at it from the 10,000 foot view, and what does it look like from that perspective. You know, I really try to do my best to look at it from a lot of different angles, but I do value some opinions of people that some of which are within our organization, some of which are looking at it from 10,000 feet. And, you know, when you start to hear a little bit of a common theme or some thoughts or maybe a way to address some of it, you know, I try to take those opinions seriously and then try to formulate a plan of action that is best to address our team moving forward. So, yeah, yes, I have.
On your far right, Terry.
Good morning, Coach Sarkisian. Good morning, Terry. So you talked about fan appreciation. We were just 84 short of 100,000 at DKR, and it was a great crowd. What would you say to those fans who are not right now at DKR supporting the team, but they can while they're not in the stands, and it has that effect of echoing to the players and to the team, you know, that they are capable of winning, and they are, you know, lifting them up, putting wind in their sails?
No, I think, one, we've got an unbelievable fan base here, and the support has been tremendous. I recognize when you kick off at 11 a.m., that's not easy for everybody. Everybody's got other things going on in their lives. That, you know, obviously Longhorn football, it carries a lot of weight, and it's very important, but other people have things going on. So 11 a.m. kicks aren't easy. And so to have that support was tremendous for our own players. I think we've got an exciting brand of football. I think we see the glimpses of what this thing can look like and what it will look like moving forward. I think we're very close. I'm excited for what this future holds for us. And I think as people get on board and really dive into this thing and really look at it, you know, wholeheartedly to say, you know, that brand of football and the way they're playing and the style of play, I get, hey, we make some mistakes and we do some things that, hey, I would love to have a couple calls back. That's no different than any other game. But the reality of it is the style in which we play, the excitement that is generated in DKR, what that does for our players, and then clearly what it does for recruiting and moving forward for the future of our program, it's tremendous. And we're greatly appreciative of the support that we get.
Made some switches on the O-line in-game.
Yeah.
You hadn't done that in the weeks prior. How do you anticipate mixing and matching in-game again going forward, and how would you assess how guys who made their first starts or first appearances did?
Yeah, we, you know, that was the plan going in. You know, Tope was making his first career start. So to think he was just going to go all four quarters, that probably wouldn't have been fair to him. So we wanted to roll Hayden Connor some in there with him. Getting Derek back at right tackle, I think, was helpful. I thought it was good for Derek. And then having a little bit of a healthy competition with Christian and Andre at left tackle, I think, was good. You know, ideally moving forward, Tope continues to kind of just gain that comfort level of playing and being more of just the consistent player at right guard. And then we're going to monitor the situation at left tackle as we go for the next 2 weeks before the Baylor game.
Do you have any updates on, you know, potential timelines for returns for some of the injured guys?
You know, obviously DeMarvion, you know, was a concussion. So those are tough to predict. I think we're fortunate in, you know, that you know, we have the bye this week, so we have some time until the next time we take the field. So, but, you know, concussions are what they are. You know, there's no, it's not a broken bone where you can say it's 6 weeks or something like that. They take on the, however it affects each individual. So we'll monitor that. You know, Keaton Crawford really be kind of be day to day as we move forward with him. And really the rest of the guys are surgery guys. So they're going to be out here for a little bit.
I know it's a little complex because you have Bijan and Roshan, but do you want to get Keelan more involved offensively because of the speed he brings, and how do you balance out that with the other two running backs?
Yeah. We visited about that as an offensive staff, you know, really right after the game, and then even yesterday. You know, it's a fine line. You know, when you have such a quality player in Bijan and what he provides for our team. You know, he obviously is an electric player. We see it every Saturday and what he can do. But we also have seen glimpses of what Keelan has brought to the table. Even the, you know, some of the few snaps he got Saturday, the impact that he had. So, you know, we're always trying to evolve. We're always trying to put ourselves in the best situation to be successful, not only just the individual players, but us as a team. So I would anticipate we'll continue to find a way and a role for him to be involved in what we do moving forward.
Steve, how much of the adjustments you make in the off week are schematic, like on defense? How much two high safety do you play versus bringing a guy down? How much four-man line versus three-man line, that kind of thing? Or even moving guys, you know, in and out of the lineup?
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing we're really trying to do early in the week this week, Chip, is let's dig into the things that we do really well. And it's easy to go fix the issues, but I think we first need to identify what are we doing really well, and how do we do more of what we're doing well, or a variation of what we're doing well, whether that's a scheme, you know, whether it's a style of a play call, whether it's a specific position that a player's in on certain plays. So we're really trying to dive into that. And then how do we emphasize that, build upon that, and then looking at things that maybe haven't been very good for us. You know, clearly, you know, everywhere you go, you know, like for myself, you know, we're running plays now that we're better at now than we were running those same plays at Alabama. And there's other plays that we were really good at in the last spot I was at that we're just not. It's not hitting the same for us here, and that's okay. Everywhere you go, every team, every year, some things flow a little bit better in one way than the other. And so I think that's the beauty of the bye, is having a chance to reevaluate that and making sure we're doing the things that we do well, but then also making sure that we're putting the players in the best position to do the things that they do well. And that's really what the bye is all about. That's what, especially the early part of the week during the bye, can be really advantageous. So that we can do some of the extended work here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. One, to make sure we're reinforcing the things that we're doing well, cleaning up a couple of things that we know we're going to need to be better at so that we can be as complete of a team as we can. But then also making sure that the players are getting put in the position to have success too, to do the things that they do well.
On your right, Roger.
Seems like a little offensive shift, Big 12, kind of the year of the running back, putting up some big numbers. You're going to see the next two weeks some guys – in 2 weeks, is that something where you think you can make strides in improving in the, you know, something like run defense?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I the hard part for me, it's like a lot of phases in the game Saturday. You know, I thought we were playing pretty good run defense against a really good run offensive team, and that's what they did. We knew that coming in. And I thought we were productive stopping the run and limiting them in the explosive plays. The challenge for us as a team and trying to get the team to understand complementary football, that's what great teams do. They play really well together. Offense, defense, special teams, the field position, the vertical field position, taking advantage of opportunities. We get an interception, we get a short field, turning that into points. Not putting our defense in uncompromising situations. You know, when we're backed up inside our own five, the idea is we got to go get two first downs so at minimum we can flip the field and not give them the short field. Our inability to do that Saturday showed up as well. So yeah, we can stare at the run defense, but ultimately when you go three and out four consecutive drives, the same big guys for us have to get back out there and continue to try to stop the run. Ideally, yeah, we do it, and we have to work on that and clean that up. But I think holistically, the idea of complementary football is an area for us that I think we can improve upon and play the same style that we were playing in the first half, where we work really well together. And our inability to do that Saturday, I think, was probably the most glaring thing for me. We didn't work well together, offense, defense, and special teams.
Steve, will you do any Baylor install this week? And then secondly, what you've described, the days you're practicing, kind of what you guys want to accomplish, is that how you like to run bye weeks, or has that adjusted at all based off the last 2 weeks?
No, it's pretty consistent with what we do. We really try to hone in, okay, where are we as a program? What's the state of where we're at today? What are the things that we do well? What are the things that aren't so well? Are the things that aren't so well, are they worth it investing in for the next, you know, 6-7 weeks? Or are we really just going to keep focusing on the things that we do well? So that, all that's pretty common. We do, as a staff, dig into Baylor from a game plan standpoint, and we will sprinkle some of those things in throughout the practice. But the majority of the practice is making sure that we recapture our fundamentals and our techniques. Because sometimes you get so scheme-oriented as the season goes on and you start to lose some of those fundamentals and techniques that can help clean up the scheme. And so that's a big portion of us this week, of to dig back into more individual periods, more position-specific things, and not as much just team and scheme. We will still do it, but it's a little bit of a different shift than what we would do in a normal game week.
Coach, you hadn't shied away about, you know, wanting to compete for a championship this year, and you even talked about it last week. When you're sitting at 2-2, what do you tell your team as far as that big picture goal, or do you have to narrow your focus at this moment?
I think this. There's a lot of football left to be played. A lot of teams need to play one another. We have to take care of our business, and our business is the next game. And you know, we kind of have to get ourselves into the mindset of, you know, it's one step after another. It's not trying to just get to that game. And we miss the process of getting to that game. But there's a lot of football to be left. And, you know, the one thing that we can control is what we do. So that's really what the focus is on and has been on, but will continue to be on. And we'll see where the chips fall. You know, we'll see what happens with some of these games with people playing one another. You know, in the end, come Thanksgiving and we're playing right here, hopefully that game means something, giving us an opportunity to maybe get into that game. But until then, we got to focus on cleaning up some things, focusing on what we're good at this week, and then getting ready to play a really good Baylor team next week.
Back here on your left, Matthew.
Hey, Steve, what's your thought process like from a creativity standpoint when you're trying to jumpstart an offense that might be struggling with three and outs? Are there any specific players you're trying to target?
I think that varies week to week. Yeah, I've been doing this a long time. You know, I think every team, every identity of every team is different. You know, sometimes you're struggling as an offense and a couple of the guys that you know are your playmakers haven't really touched the ball. So, yeah, they become an emphasis to try to get them the ball to get you going. Sometimes you're struggling because maybe we're not blocking things very well up front, so you're trying to call some things that give your offensive line confidence to go make those blocks so that they can get going. Sometimes it's about the quarterback, and sometimes it's about the play caller, of just finding your rhythm and getting your own rhythm back. So, you know, it's always, you know, there's always something for some reason why you're not going the way you want to go. And that, as a coach, is where you have to be adaptable to do the things necessary to put your team in the best position to have some success to get that momentum back. So, like I said, I've been doing it a long time. Been fortunate to have had a lot of success. Not every game has been perfect. It didn't score 50 points every time we went, but have historically found a way to make the necessary adjustments to be a good offensive football team kind of year in and year out.
With the bye week, I know you mentioned Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and you don't, you know, really get going for Baylor until next week. Does that allow you to try and rotate some of the younger guys into, you know, maybe first, second team reps to see how they hold up, and who are some of the guys who may not play on Saturdays but do well in the week?
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. You know, we've got some nicked up older players who have been playing a lot of ball that we definitely want to not shut down, but limit them some this week. And so that does create opportunity for some younger players. You know, one guy jumps out to me is Maurice Blackwell. He's a guy 4 weeks ago didn't play at all. Saturday started on three special teams for us and is really coming along with his development. But really across the board, you know, we're seeing development in a lot of players. We see it on the practice field. They may not be getting their opportunities in game, but that's why we try to pride ourselves on being a developmental program. We don't just work with the guys that play on Saturday. We work with everybody in our program so that they all can continue to get better. And whether we reap the benefits of that right now or in spring practice next year or next fall, time will tell. Every individual is different, but we don't neglect those guys. We're constantly trying to work with them on a daily basis.
Last one in the middle, Brian.
Two-part question. First off, what did you think of the call on Ray and then the non-call when they buried Casey?
Yeah, I mean, they're tough calls, you know, to me. We sent him into the league. I haven't heard back what those are. You know, all we ever ask for is just call it consistently, right? And, hey, if we're going to protect the quarterback, let's protect the quarterback, right? If we're going to not be handsy at DB, then let's not be handsy at DB. And so consistency is all we're looking for. So that was probably the only thing that was my frustration in the game on those two calls.
And then along those lines, the way that Casey came off the field and then literally ran back in, I mean, did you expect that? And now that Hudson has played a fifth game, do you look for ways to maybe get him in more?
Yeah, I mean, we're always trying to find a way and develop in Hud. And, Hud was ready to go, jumped in there and did it. I wasn't surprised. I think Casey's a tough kid, and he's a competitor. And, you know, football is a physical sport. And he's not the first guy since the inception of the game to, you know, get dinged up and sit out a play and go back in. I don't think that that's uncommon. I felt like he's kind of earned that right coming off of the Oklahoma game when he injured his thumb and went back in and played good football for us. So we monitor a lot in the program, but Hud's going to get his opportunity. I've been saying it day one. We're going to need both these guys to compete at the highest level for us this fall, and Hud is doing the necessary things for him to keep developing his game so that when his number does get called that he can perform at a high level. All right, guys, thank you. Have a good afternoon.
Longhorns head coach Steve Sarkisian with his weekly news conference. Again, the most notable items to come out of it today, mentioning that DeMarvian Overshown still recovering from the concussion, and they'll continue to monitor him this week with an eye toward the hope that he'll be able to return next week. But we'll see. That's up in the air right now. Keaton Crawford will be day-to-day. The rest of the guys who had needed some operations or surgeries will be They said it was going to take a little more time on that. And again, in case you didn't hear it, for the fifth consecutive ball game, Texas will have an 11 a.m. kick. The game on October 30th in Waco against Baylor is selected for television with an 11 a.m. kickoff on ABC. All right, that's going to wrap up the news conference from here on the campus. We'll take a break. When we come back, Jeff Howe and I will return with more of Light the Tower. Here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
RP.
We continue with Light the Tower now on the Horn. Craig Way, Jeff Howe with you. And having just moved from the press conference room back to our set up where we broadcast every Monday when we bring you the news conference from here on the 40 acres. So at 11:33, what that means is it's time for another edition of the Notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
So, which of course is going to be the recap of the news conference, I would imagine, that we just heard.
I rode the elevator down with Sark from the ninth floor.
Did you?
You guys want all that thrilling inside information I collected on that?
I bet that was revealing.
10-second elevator ride. No, he got the story on how I got a 5 a.m. wake up call. My 3-year-old young Charlotte said she saw a bug on the wall in there. There was no bug in the bedroom, Craig, and of course, as a dad, you check every square inch of the bedroom.
Yeah.
There is nothing.
And to her, it was real.
It was very real. But, yeah. You know, it not the first time that's happened. Won't be the last.
That's for sure.
So we'll start the news conference with this. The easiest part is the injury updates.
Yep.
DeMarvian Overshown still being evaluated for a concussion. Keaton Crawford is day-to-day. Now, Jake Majors left the game. Yeah, with a lower leg injury or a leg injury of some sort. The initial diagnosis from what I heard on the Jake Major situation was that it didn't appear that there was anything structural. And for Sark not to mention it today, I guess you'll see, but it sounds like everything there is fine, just maybe survived a scare.
And didn't he come back in? I thought he came back in because that's what the folks in the booth were telling me.
I'd have to go look because I haven't finished the rewatch yet, and that was when I'm walking through the field and I'm watching the last possession or two on the big screen.
Gotcha.
So there's that on the injury front. You know, Sark got asked about the Hudson Card Casey Thompson dynamic, and it's totally understandable. But I think he made a really good point from the standpoint of you look at kind of this credibility that Casey's built up the last few weeks, and throwing five touchdowns against Oklahoma, you know, going on the road, getting a win over TCU, as good as he looked in the Texas Tech game and the Rice game. As Sark put it, he's kind of earned the right to work through some of those issues a little bit. And he was not good on Saturday, point blank. And you know, was he healthy? No. And he said it after the game. He's got the thumb deal going in and, you know, took a really vicious shot in the third quarter, which, by the way, for those who weren't able to listen to the press conference or maybe didn't catch it, Sark did say every Big 12 coach submits calls throughout the game to the league for review. And I'm sure there were more, but the two that they submitted were the roughing the passer call that went against Ray Thornton and what everybody thought, okay, if you're going to call it this way, what a lot of people felt should have been a roughing the passer call given the circumstance, Malcolm Rodriguez on Casey Thompson. Sark said they haven't heard back from the league. So I thought that was interesting. I very rarely, Craig, I think this might be the first time ever I've gotten the first question in a Monday press conference. It's weird. I'm usually writing or something, but nobody else had their hand up, so I was like, well, I'll get this party started. No problem there. I did ask Sark, and kind of, you know, I understand there are people that want to criticize some of the questions we asked, and that's fair game. So there was a reason why I asked the question the way I asked it. You know, again, like we talked about in the first hour, Craig, Sark's not responsible for what happened prior to him getting here, right? But the numbers are the numbers, and these are still the same players that were in 27 one-possession games before he got here. And I asked him, you know, the inability to finish those games, is it a systemic issue that's not going to get fixed with the time you've got left in the regular season? In other words, as deep as the problem runs, Craig, and he was asked a lot about the mental part of it, the psychological part of it, as deep as some of that stuff runs, he talked about peeling the layers of the onion back. I don't know that it can get fixed. You know, you can't just flip a switch and it just gets fixed all of a sudden, but maybe it can. But as he said, look, you recognize, as you peel the layers back, you recognize the problems and you deal with it right then and there. And I've got to think during this bye week, that is something they talk about of, like he told us on Saturday in the postgame, like you can't just try to hold on in that scenario. You've got to, to get to where you want to be, you got to go finish teams off.
Yeah, and so that was a big part of the things that they needed to work on during the bye week, because he was also asked, you know, how much Baylor game plan do you implement or things that you put in for that. And he said, you know, as coaches, we'll certainly dive in, and we may mix in a few things, but it's more about, he said, fixing the things that need fixing on their end, regardless of opponent.
Right.
And that was going to be a lot of the main thrust and main emphasis of this week.
The other thing I thought was interesting, based on his response, my colleague Chip Brown actually asked the question, you know, defensively, what do you fix during the bye week? Is it schematics? Is it personnel? And I think this is really and the bye week is a good time. Look, the defense has been bad, right? And it's funny, you know, a lot of the feedback I get, Craig, is I don't think it's right, at least in my opinion, to, like, ask, call for Pete Kwiatkowski's job right now. There are people doing that.
There are.
And the response I get when I say, look, it's ridiculous to call for the guy's job right now, seven games into this. Well, what do you think he's done a good job? Well, no. The numbers say the defense has been terrible. Mm-hmm. Like, you can have one without the other. You can say the defense hasn't been good and the coaching staff needs to pick it up without saying, I'll just fire him after seven games. Like, to make that judgment, I think, is just wrong and ridiculous. But this is where I think it's got to start. And this was Sark's answer. to fix the issues, you got to start by identifying what does this defense do well? What are things you can hang your hat on? And when you're dealing in a crisis situation, which quite frankly, that's where this defense is right now. What do they do well? Well, okay, again, every game they've created a turnover. So they're capable of turning you over. That's one thing they do well. By and large, now, they've faced more red zone possessions than anybody in the Big 12. But they've also got one of the best touchdown allowed percentages in terms of allowing the fewest percentage of touchdowns in the red zone. They do tend to play really good red zone defense. That's another thing. So that's two things that you can start to, okay, we do those things well, now let's build it out from there. I do think, though, they're going to have to change some things schematically. They're going to have to continue to tinker with personnel. This defense is not going to be an elite defense this year. Just basically, if you're expecting them to turn the corner and be just make this drastic turnaround, it's not going to happen. What I think you're looking for, though, Craig, are incremental improvements. Can you start forcing some more three and outs? And quite honestly, this goes back to another thing that Sark said is a big picture thing for them this week. Just playing good complementary football. If you play complementary football the last 2 weeks, you win both of those games.
Yep.
But, you know, when the offense went in a rut in the third quarter, the defense held on as best they could. And, you know, it's kind of like last week in the Oklahoma game. Like, it's not so much, Craig, that the plays the defense is facing, right? Because in this league, some weeks you're going to face a lot of plays. It's the fact that it's almost like, think about how it gets here in Central Texas sometimes, right? Like when we go so long without rain, and then you just get a lot of it in a short amount of time, and then our creeks and rivers can't handle it. When the normal flow of the game gets disrupted, and all of a sudden it's three and out, you're back on the field, three and out, you're back on the field, three and out, you're back on the field. That play differential that might be plus 10 or plus 12 in favor of the opponent to your team, it feel, and again, with the lack of depth Texas has right now on defense, that could feel like a plus 20, a plus 25 play sure. differential, because it's so many plays you're playing in such a short amount of time. And then on top of that pressure of, okay, the offense isn't getting it done, now you've really got to try to go three and out and get them the ball back. You're compounding an issue.
Which also – I thought was interesting when he was asked about would some younger guys, reserves, guys that aren't necessarily classified as starters, perhaps get some more work this week, some more reps, especially as guys are banged up. And he said, it's a fair question. Yeah, especially to take some of the load off some of those guys, the grind off some of those guys, and give some of those younger guys a chance to do some things and maybe show what they can do.
For sure. Like Maurice Blackwell's a guy that he mentioned specifically by name. I think some of those young defensive linemen, a Baron Sorrell, a guy like that we've seen play a little bit, a Sawyer Gorham Welch, a Myron Warren.
Jalen Ford
at linebacker, especially since, you know, I would doubt DeMarvion Overshone's able to do anything this week being in the concussion protocol. A Jalen Ford, a David Benda. You know, do you look at Keaton Crawford's out? Do you get a closer look at Jade Barron at corner?
Sure.
Do you start tinkering with some depth at safety? And maybe get J.D. Coffey some reps. Not that J.D. Coffey's going to step in and play, but you've got some younger guys that you can at least, you know, get a look at. And give guys that have had those higher rep numbers, give them a little bit of a break this week.
I will correct you on one thing and one thing only. When you said the easiest thing was to recap the injuries. No, the easiest thing is to mention the kickoff time of the next game.
Yeah, yeah.
How about five consecutive games to 11 a.m.? I can say with complete and total confidence that's never happened for the University of Texas. Five consecutive games with 11 a.m. kicks. But that's the television networks for you. So, it's difficult to try to figure out what their mindset is on some of that stuff, especially as we looked at some of the other games for that weekend that it might happen that they might go ahead and pick that, because the other kick times for that week, Iowa State is at West Virginia. That's a Big 12 Now on ESPN Plus game, a 1 o'clock kick. TCU's at Kansas State at 2:30. Tech is at Oklahoma at 2:30.
Do we know what the big noon is for Fox that week?
It's
either going to be Michigan State or Penn State, Ohio State.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a big game. There's no doubt about it. My point was going to be, when you run down this list of other games and ABC is doing the choice on that, I guess we shouldn't be surprised when those other games I just ran down. Iowa State at West Virginia, TCU at K-State, Tech at Oklahoma, Kansas at Oklahoma State. I mean, even with the struggles Texas has had playing at Baylor, which has only lost one ball game right now, I guess it probably makes sense that they would go with that game because the 4 and 11 a.m. kick for the window there. So, anyway, that's I know that doesn't come as great news to a lot of folks. Some folks like it. They like the 11 a.m. kick. And I did think that Sark, he thanked the fans for coming. He said, I know 11 a.m. doesn't work for everybody. Everybody's got things going on, and it's not the easiest thing in the world. I would say that 11 a.m. is not the easiest thing in the world to do week after week after week after week.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. Not necessarily the odd 11 a.m. kick, but when it happens several weeks in a row, including on the road in Fort Worth, including up in Dallas for the OU game, and then at home, and you had one before you went to the Metroplex against Texas Tech, and now you're going to have another one on the road at 11 a.m. That's when it gets difficult.
Can I address something on the Specs Text line real quick?
And yes.
I promise myself, Craig, after the last time I did this, I'm not going to rant and rave on this
okay.
show.
I'm
All not right. going to act like a drunken frat boy and just yell. There's enough of that.
There's on, plenty on of the that going on out there
yeah.
anyway. All
right. I'm gonna be calm and I can be calm.
Okay.
So this texter texts in and says, I noticed a lot of you guys get cold feet when it's time to ask questions. But here you come on the Horn as well as Orange Blood, which I don't even work for that site, so I don't even know why you would bring that up. And don't ask none of the questions you talk about here. I asked a question that I basically talked about the entire first hour of the show today.
Yeah. Yeah.
We only usually get one question during the press conference, and there's a level of decorum, a level of professionalism, which, judging by the content and the structure of your text, you probably know little about, of how the reporter-coach relationship works. We don't go in and just ask, Coach, why does the team suck right now? Why is your defense terrible? It doesn't work like that. It clearly shows when I see texts like that, you don't know crap from apple butter about how our industry works or how to conduct yourself at a press conference. So from now on, I'm not going to address texts like this anymore. I'm not going to address it. I know folks want to blame us because they don't get their way. If you were good enough at doing something, you would be in this position instead of me. So from now on, I'm not going to address texts like this. I'm just going to delete it. And if it persists, I'll just block you from the text line. How about that?
Well, look, use some common sense here, is all I would say. If you were in the news conference, would you get all aggressive and offensive at the head football coach? There's no way you would. There's no way you would. The room itself would probably intimidate you just being in there. So just use some common sense.
I'm not mad. I'm just setting the record straight.
And Jeff did ask a question. In fact, several questions. He was asked, is Casey Thompson still the starting quarterback? And then he was asked, given Hudson's struggles, you made the change. What's the difference? Sark was asked that. He outlined the differences, like you just pointed out, that he's earned the opportunity to work through some more of that based on what he's done. Not sure what it is. He was asked also about the inefficiencies of the offensive line, the struggles on the defensive line. He mentioned Chip's question about what you work through defensively, what they work through offensively, the mental game. Cedric Golden asked him about, does he have a Mr. Miyagi to help him with the mental mindset of what you go through. I'm not sure what it is you're wanting to be asked that wasn't asked in an accusatory attack style.
I'll say
you can ask questions in a methodical, professional way and get a professional answer without having to go on the quote-unquote offensive in an accusatory manner and therefore probably not get the answer that you want.
I'll say this in closing, and I know of all the coaches I've covered here, Augie Garrido, God rest his soul, is not here to verify this, but he would. Whether it was Augie, David Pierce, Rick Barnes, Shaka Smart, Mac Brown, Charlie Strong, Tom Herman, Steve Sarkisian, ask any of the coaches I've covered. If I write something negatively or say something negatively, where am I? I'm right there at the very next press availability showing my face. There have been times where coaches I've covered have taken issue with something I've written.
And have asked you about it.
And have asked me about it. But I'm there. I show my face and I'm there and I show up and I try to be professional about it. So,
yeah. I always think back to a comment from Reggie Jackson when a reporter was, you know, trying to go on the offensive, and he said, "You need to do a better job of asking the question you want in order to get the response that you want. Not necessarily what's the truth, what you want." Because sometimes the two can be mutually exclusive. So just make, like I said, common sense.
I want to address it today because it popped up. And
okay.
I'm not mad about it. I'm not angry about it. Craig, am I angry right now?
No.
You see me, man.
You're pretty calm right now.
I'm pretty chill. Just understand. Just trying to educate the people on the way things work. And if you don't like it, that's fine. But at least understand how it works. So there.
Okay, we'll be back to wrap up today's edition of Light the Tower on the Horn.
You don't get the